Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back.
I'm Anthony McCarthy. Great to be back.
Good to have you back. And I'll remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, www.mecu.com. Remember that MeQ is a credit union. It belongs to you. And you can find out more also if you go to steinershow.org and click on their banner. So we are going to start with Donna Edwards. Actually, the redistricting, but as we've been talking, it has a lot to do with Donna Edwards, we think. We're joined first here by Delegate Ayesha Braveboy from the 25th District in Prince George's County. And Ayesha, welcome. Good to have you back with us.
Thank you so much. Hi, Anthony.
Hi, Ayesha. Great to talk to you.
Great to talk to you as well.
So let me just start, jump in here. And Anthony, please jump right in because I miss your voice in the air here, so I'm glad you're back. As I watch this unfold, Ayesha, and you were on this program the other week talking about this, you know, A, there was this possibility that Baltimore and probably should have given the population at least another district that was majority, what we call minority. It didn't happen, even though the population could end up being 50-50 white and non-white in this state. And sure. B, the more I kept looking at it, and I'll put it out here directly and you can respond to it. The more I kept looking at this, it kept feeling like, is this a move to move Donna Edwards out of Congress?
Well, if that was the purpose behind the move, I think that they failed.
Well, I mean that because they took away the heart of her original support in eastern Prince George's County and western Montgomery County. And she is this new leading light who is becoming a leader nationally and clearly is on a road to becoming a leader of the Progressive Caucus in Washington, a completely independent voice. And that's why I say that when you look at how her district was all cut up.
Well, let me just say this. I think she definitely retains the bulk of her district in Prince George's County. And while when she ran, I guess, back in 2006, the first time, she received a lot of support in Montgomery County and good support, obviously, in Prince George's County. In her later races, I mean, she's really carrying Prince George's County. When she beat Al Wynn back in 2008, I mean, she did so with, you know, winning every single precinct except maybe one or two in Prince George's County. So I think her base has certainly grown over the last 3 to 4 years. She's very, very popular, one of the most popular political figures in our state and certainly in our county and in this region. So I think that that if there was a move to try to sort of oust her, I think that certainly failed miserably with this redistricting. I think that her issue was really not about self-preservation, because I think that, you know, the polls kind of indicate that she's very, very popular amongst, you know, Marylanders. But I think it was really about fairness and equity with our minority population. And so, I look at it as a big loss for the minority population in our state.
Delegate Braveboy, let me ask you two things very quickly. We've seen people announce over the last couple of days, the last 5 days, that they are planning to challenge Donna Edwards in the new 4th district, as they're talking about. Do you think that they would, Ivy, Arundel County, Benoit, and a few others saying that they are looking at seriously challenging Donna Edwards because of the new configuration. Do you think they would be doing that if, in fact, they did not have the support of the governor or others behind the scenes, maybe pushing Donna Edwards out because she is a progressive, a well-known national progressive?
Well, you know, I don't really want to speak to mm-hmm. other people's motives. I mean, no one has shared anything with me, so mm-hmm. I can't really speak to that. I think it is quite interesting, however, that a number of people are sort of stepping up. But, you know, it's not too far-fetched. I mean, that
very true.
Who are, you know, when districts are changed, that, you know, people look at it as an opportunity maybe to to run for an office that they otherwise wouldn't believe that they would have a chance winning. I think if you look at the configuration even of the new 4th Congressional District, again, the bulk and the heart of the 4th Congressional District stays in Prince George's County, where Donna Edwards has an overwhelming sort of majority of support.
Mm-hmm.
And so while I think that there could be some folks who think that maybe because she's losing Montgomery County, picking up Anne Arundel County, that somehow means that her support is being, you know, shifted or diluted, I think that what they'll find is that they're mistaken, because unlike somewhat local elected officials, I mean, as Mark mentioned earlier, she's really a national figure.
Mm-hmm.
She has been on several news programs. I mean, people know her name. They've heard her speak on important issues like health care and Medicare and things that are meaningful to people. So I think that her reach is much larger than her district anyway. So I really don't see it being an issue for her. I think that they're probably, I'm sure, folks even in leadership that would, you know, certainly like to have someone who kind of falls in line a little bit more. She's more of an independent voice. She won outside of the sort of mainstream process. She raised her own money. She raised a lot of progressive money. And so... I think that makes people a little nervous.
Aisha, I want to ask you also, Delegate Brayboy, I want to also ask you about all of the conversations and energy that during the special session around the Republican plan, which created, as Mark said, two African-American districts, majority African-American districts, and then a majority minority district.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people scratching their head asking why African-American legislators might not be interested in that creation of that minority district.
Well, I don't think that there was a reluctance to mm-hmm. want to create a majority-minority district. The question for us is how do we get more representation for African-Americans and also other minorities in this state? And as I saw it, we really looked at targeting, again, the 4th, the 7th, and then the 5th Congressional
District,
mm-hmm. which is currently represented by Steny Hoyer. However, if you look at that district, it is trending African-American. There's a large number of African-Americans who have moved into southern Maryland, in particular Charles County, which is now majority-minority county. And as we did some analysis on the primaries, we looked at it and really could determine that the primary there is about 57 or so percent minority, really black,
mm-hmm.
around 57% black in terms of minority voters. So we looked at that as a real opportunity to pick up a minority in that seat, in the 5th congressional seat. So I think that there's certainly a lot of ways that you can look at a map and ways of achieving goals, but that seems like the best way to achieve it, looking at the population pattern. And then we didn't want to really cut off an opportunity for, to grow another minority district really in the Montgomery County area. Now, Montgomery County is a majority-minority county. So instead of sort of combining or with Charles County and doing some other strange, you know, configurations, if you really look at it, there would have been a real good opportunity for 4 minority representatives to Congress if we would have just allowed the populations to grow the way that they're growing and not dilute the vote of minorities, in particular Montgomery County, by splitting Montgomery County into 3 majority white districts.
I have been, and I'll let Mark jump back in here.
Okay.
I've been very impressed, I have to tell you, and I'm a little biased because I know so many of you who were involved in this process, with how strategic you were, especially over the summer. I know you chaired a lot of those meetings. Just how strategic you all were at making sure that you looked at the growing populations and not go for the quick fix, but really look strategic at how you could grow populations that would naturally create these districts.
Absolutely. That's exactly what we were looking at. And I know that there were for many reasons, I believe that the Republicans pushed a map that would have created, you know, sort of this, you know, 3 majority-minority districts. But when you looked at it, I think that it actually took away from the growth that would have occurred, that would naturally occur in Montgomery County with minorities. And so instead of having sort of three minority districts into the future, we're really looking for four. And the way you do that is you allow Southern Maryland to grow, keep that district intact, which it's, you know, pretty much in the map that was adopted was intact. But unfortunately, what happened in the 8th congressional district really was disappointing because Montgomery County, again, is a majority-minority county. The 8th congressional district was a majority-minority congressional district at 50.4%. Now that district is down to about 34% minority. So that was really the disappointing thing that happened during this redistricting process.
I'd like to hear from our listeners out there, 410-319-8888. A lot of people listening here to the Mark Steiner Show on WEAA and listening to WEAA live in Southern Maryland, live in Prince George's County.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd love to hear your thoughts on this redistricting. Or anybody who wants to join us here from any district, your thoughts on where this went. And I know that Ayesha Brave Woods, she's a great delegate, and she's, you know, has to also measure her words on some levels. I don't expect people to come out and say what I said about Donna Edwards. But I'm curious to your thoughts at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Because, frankly, and I'll just throw this out here, and it may be difficult to deal with, but there are people who have anecdotally said that Congressman Cummings is very happy with the map, and so what's the problem? And that Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown would like to see what happens to his political wins once he leaves lieutenant governorship. The chances of running for governor are low, but the chances of him running for Congress are high. And I know that
I had not heard that.
A lot of people are talking about it.
A lot of people are saying
that. I've been
surprised
at the energy around this whole redistricting, the targeting of Donna Edwards, Mark, and the lieutenant governor's future political plans. And, I mean, it's well known that this governor is very close to Glenn Ivey and has become closer to Glenn Ivey since his running for the nomination. So there's a lot of speculation on what's happening. But as Delegate Brayboy said, Mark, and you have mentioned this, she's been on your show several times. We've interviewed her. She really has secured herself as a national progressive spokesperson on health care, on a lot of progressive issues. She'll be a very tough candidate to beat, especially with progressive money coming from around the country.
And one of the things I did want to mention is when Donna Edwards won in 2008, she did so with really no backing from any
that's true.
Political kind of machine or sort of that network of
an establishment
that call themselves right the establishment. I supported her obviously, and Delegate Pena Melnick, Jocelyn Pena Melnick supported her. And Valerie Irving, who's now the chair of the Montgomery County Council, supported her, but she did not have a lot of sort of the old establishment, you know, support. And actually, neither did a lot of us when we ran.
No, you did not. And if anything, Prince George's County is known for that old boys network, whether it's black or white.
Right, but I think that this is a new era for our county. I think our electorate is a lot more in tune in what's going on, and I think they're listening to issues a lot more. And so when Donna won, I think it was really a reflection of the growth of our constituents and our voters and their interest in the issues and their reluctance to just go along with a slate system, which is what has dominated Prince George's County heretofore. So I think she really allowed Prince George's County to turn the page on that old way of thinking and pave the way for a new progressive thought in our county.
Let me open the phones here, 410-319-8888. We want to hear your thoughts on this. We're also joined now by State Senator Jamie Raskin from District 20 in Tacoma Park, which I think used to be in Donna Edwards District. Am I right about that, Jamie?
Hello, Mark. Greetings to everybody else there. Part of my district, part of District 20, was part of the 4th District, and part of it in the 8th. And now the Montgomery County portions have been divided up between the 8th Chris Van Hollen district and Congressman Sarbanes' 3rd district. So we've been kind of sliced and diced a bit there. But, yes, and Don and I, I'm proud that, like Delegate Braveboy, I endorsed her and ran with her in 2006 when I was an insurgent candidate against an incumbent in District 20. And then, you know, she came in, you know, within a hair of dislodging Congressman Wynn in 06, and then she ran again in 08, and I was the only senator in the delegation to endorse her at that point. But, you know, she's a very progressive and very tough candidate, and, you know, I think she's going to be very tough for anybody to beat if they decide to run against her.
Well, I have to ask this question, though, Jamie, and Aisha has talked, Brave Boy, Delegate Brave Boy has talked about this in the air as well. Here's what I don't understand. I've got to ask you just a straight-up political question here. Is how could Democratic senators and delegates have voted for that plan? How could, I mean, when you look at that, let me just throw these two reasons. I mean, I understand the political machinations of Democrats in control, push out the Republicans, Republican control, push out the Democrats. Not that I agree with it, but I understand it. But when you look at the 3rd district, what is that district? I mean, what does it come from?
Yeah.
I mean, and what they did to Donna Edwards district was also equally kind of weird to me, if not a direct slap in her face.
Well, first of all, the constitutional irony of the 3rd district is if that were a majority African American or Hispanic district, it would almost certainly be unconstitutional under Shaw versus Reno and Miller versus Johnson. I mean, the Supreme Court has basically an explicit racial double standard now, where you can have a bizarrely drawn majority white district, but you can't have a bizarrely drawn majority black district. But, you know, leaving that aside, look, I'm opposed to all gerrymandering, which is to say I'm opposed to all redistricting, because all redistricting is gerrymandering at this point. I mean, if you don't think the politicians know exactly who is in the district, whether it's a square, a triangle, a circle, or squiggly lines all over the map, if you don't think they know exactly who's in there in terms of, you know, race, ethnicity, party, and so on, you know, you're too innocent to be let out of the house by yourself. I mean, that is what politicians do, and that's what politicians know perhaps better than anything. So the only way out of this, and this is what I talked about on the floor of the Senate, is to move to proportional representation. Mm-hmm. So we could create basically 2 districts in the state of Maryland. They could be very neat and compact looking, you know, just basically split the state down the middle and have 4 people elected from each one, and then you give each voter 4 votes. And they can distribute them as they see fit. They can have 4 votes for 1 candidate, or 2 and 2, or they can vote, you know, once for 4 candidates. And what this system of proportional representation does all over the world is to empower minorities, however defined in political terms or racial or ethnic terms, to get people elected to office. So if you could get 25% of the vote plus 1 vote, you could get somebody elected to office. Now, the problem is, the reason I wasn't able to introduce this as a bill is because it's federal law right now that you've got to use single-member districts. And what we're seeing, not just in Maryland, but all over the country, is it's a recipe for disaster, because you get, you know, politicians choosing voters before voters choose the politicians. And there's no way out unless we move to the system that most of the Democratic countries aren't.
But Mark, I wanted to mention something. I know that you indicated that, you know, how could Democrats vote for this BAP? And I don't want to speak for all of my colleagues, but I will say, as someone who did not vote for the MAP, that I respected the vote of my colleagues who did vote for the MAP. I think for the most part, they were seeking, you know, some partisan, you know, political gains and interests. And I, you know, understood that was an important nationally, you know, for the party to try to pick up as many seats as possible. What I didn't see really was Maryland being a huge factor in taking us over the top in the House, because if you look at it, Maryland, I mean, we have 8 congressional districts. We're not one of the larger states, and really we're gaining if we, in fact, gain 1 congressional district, that's really just 1. And as you look around the country, a lot of the states are being controlled by the Republican Party, and they're certainly going to be looking at picking up additional seats for their party. So even if we were to pick up, let's say, 1 seat, I think that doesn't really help us nationally get a, you know, get over that hump when we have to pick up, I think, something like 24, 25 seats. And I think we're going to probably lose a few in the process. So the goal of gaining an additional Democratic seat, I think, is a laudable one. As a Democrat, I certainly support as many Democrats getting elected as possible. But we do live in a state which does, in fact, have Republicans, believe it or not, the state of Maryland. I mean, we actually have Republicans in our state and independents and others. But what's more important is that we have minorities in our state that really deserve to be respected. And in particular in Montgomery County, if you look at what happened to Congressional District 8 in Montgomery County in total, really Montgomery County, which is a majority-minority county, was split up into three majority-white congressional districts under this plan. All three major minority groups, black, Hispanic, and Asian populations, all were drastically reduced in the 8th Congressional District. So the 8th Congressional District went from a 50.4% majority-minority district to a 34% minority district. And that to me, was unacceptable.
And Jamie, what I want to ask you then is, and then we'll go to our callers coming in at 410-319-8888, and Lamar in Baltimore County will be the first caller up. How was that acceptable to the majority of senators and delegates when you have a state that's becoming – majority, I hate using majority minority, it just sounds so silly, but majority minority and how we're changing as a state. I mean, how was that map and that cutting back on the power of African Americans and Latino voters and Asian American voters acceptable?
Okay, well, a couple of things. First, on the partisan point, you know, we followed North Carolina and Ohio, which were both states that were won by President Obama in 2008. North Carolina, which was taken over by the Republicans in 2010, they just drew 10 majority Republican districts, 3 majority Democrat districts.
Right.
Ohio, another state won by Obama, they drew 12 Republican districts and 4 Democratic districts. So, you know, Delegate Braveboy is right that we're not going to be able to make all of that up in Maryland, but we've got to do our part. I mean, we've got a responsibility to the country to try to take back the House of Representatives. I mean, it's a disaster what's going on with the Tea Party basically wrecking every possible forward movement that the president's trying to make. So that's, you know, the first thing. But on the other point, I mean, here's the real problem, and I think everybody on all sides of this has got to be honest about it. The first thing that everybody starts off with is incumbent reelection. And the fact of the matter is that neither of the members of Congress who are representing Montgomery County, Chris Van Hollen or Don Edwards, was pushing for a third majority-minority district. I totally would have supported that. And I said from the beginning I wanted to see a third majority-minority district. But for different reasons, it didn't fit in terms of what they wanted their districts to look like. And so we start off with getting the incumbents reelected, and they all want a customized, tailor-made district. You know, and that's understandable. Everybody feels that way. They want a district that perfectly mirrors their own views and their own sentiments and the people they know and so on. But there was really not an institutional force that was pushing for a third majority-minority district. I mean, and, you know, and I totally would have gone for that, given that we were stuck with the single-member districts. But I think, you know, in order to get beyond this kind of politics, I mean, minorities and women get elected in huge numbers in proportional representation regimes. I mean, we haven't even talked about gender, but we only have one woman out of 8 representatives in the state of Maryland. If we elected people in... say we could just statewide, you could vote for 8 people. There's just no way that we would have just one woman, because you would get slates of people running, and they would probably be 4 women and 4 men. And so if you go to multi-member districts, you know, all over the world, women are getting elected to office. I mean, even in, you know, county councils and city councils, it works like that.
I mean, I understand that. I have another question about that. But let me go to a caller here. I get some callers in at 410-319-8888. Lamar, you're on the air.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Real quickly, I'm not hearing the main component in all of this. Isn't there a possibility that the districts were redrawn according to favor with particular congresspersons? And, you know, and the other thing, too, I've heard a couple things as far as, don't people feel like Chris Van Hollen could possibly be Speaker of the House? And they want to protect his seat. versus Donna Edwards? I mean, isn't there something? It's I'm not really hearing the real story here, because I know a couple delegates. I know that they more than likely wanted to protect their seat. And then also, it's really complicated. I don't see why they had to actually redraw these districts.
I think the person that may be vying for speaker more than Van Hollen, but maybe it is Van Hollen as well, is Steny Hoyer, who almost became speaker.
That's right.
And whose district?
Well, he's a lot older. I'm saying in the long term, like, you know, 10 or 20 years.
Well, I think he raises a very good point. I know we're getting ready for a break and the other callers are holding. But, Mark, it's a very interesting point when people say, oh, let's get honest about what's really happening here. I think oftentimes, and this certainly isn't the case for Jamie or Aisha, but a lot of people believe that the Democratic Party, with a growing majority African-American population making up that Democratic Party, should prioritize that minority representation. I'm not sure if that's what happened. I know that there were legislators who obviously had that in the forefront of their thoughts going through this process. A lot of African-Americans who have studied this, looked at this, are raising questions about this governor and this party and their loyalty to minority representation, especially African-American representation, as loyal as that population is to this party. And that's where a lot of question marks are.
Oh, absolutely. And I don't know if we have time before the end of this segment, but I would love to discuss that in detail after segment.
Well, Aisha, can you stay for a few more minutes?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, we're going to come back with Aisha Braveboy, Delegate Aisha Braveboy, and State Senator Jamie Raskin. My dear friend and partner, Anthony McCarthy, in the studio. I think Charles Robinson from MPT will be joining us. Aaron is the next caller up, 410-319-8888. And we'll look at minority representation, what these districts did, and also maybe ask some questions about if you were going to get rid of a Republican. I have a question to ask. Why did we get rid of the Maverick and instead of getting rid of the Tea Party? We'll be back. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back.
I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And we are talking about redistricting. We were going to talk about Herman Cain, although we're going to get to it today. We'll get to it tomorrow. But
so much to talk about.
So much Herman to talk Cain. About. But Delegate Aisha Braveboy is with us, District 23.
25.
25. I should mean to move your district. I'm sorry, Aisha.
I'm 23. Who knows?
Who knows what could happen? I had the wrong part of my glasses looking at the page. State Senator Jamie Raskin from District 20. Charles Robinson now is also joined as reporter for Maryland Public Television, regional director of the National Association of Black Journalists, and also heard here now on Tuesday nights.
That's right.
At 7 p.m., at least for the time being, or maybe forever. Who knows? Charles, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Hey, great hearing from you guys again.
Hey, Charles.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us here, steinershow@gmail.com. Let me read an email, then we'll go back to the phones. Email from one of our listeners. And I love his handle is Dennis the Cynic, which is good. So he writes in, Mark, the Black Caucus accepted this redistricting with the idea of this eventual minority-majority district where Hoyer is. So here's my question. Who is to say the Democratic Party won't just readjust the map and eliminate the new district in 2021 if it benefits the larger party? What leads them to think Black voters won't just get used to it again? Better yet, what makes them think that Hoyer won't stay in office? For what it's worth, I understand why the governor did this map, but it strikes me as cynical politics for personal gain. Of course, that seems to be Martin O'Malley's agenda since 1991. Anybody like to take on the cynic's question?
Take on the cynic's question, and then I wanted to also address the issue that we talked about in terms of, you know, Black voting voters in the party and in the respect that the party needs to have for Black voters. Well, the 5th congressional district has more African Americans percentage wise than a lot of districts being represented by members of the Congressional Black Caucus. So when you look at the 5th Congressional District, it is not a district that cannot currently elect an African American. Mm-hmm. In fact, it is a district that can elect an African American. The Democratic primary numbers are very strong. It's well over 50% black Democratic primary in the 5th Congressional District. And what the Black Caucus wanted to do when we proposed our map actually increased the number of African American voters in the 5th Congressional District. One of the reasons I opposed the map that was adopted by the General Assembly is because that map actually proposed, even though it was slight, it proposed a reduction of 0.3% in the 5th Congressional District. Now, that's not going to change the Democratic primary really that much, but what my concern was, the concern that you brought up before we took the break, is that the African-American voting strength in a party where African-Americans vote overwhelmingly for the party has to be respected. So any reduction of minority voters, from black voters in particular, in the 5th Congressional District, to me, was inappropriate. And in fact, there needed to be an increase in the number of African-American voters in the 5th Congressional District. So what I'd say is that the opportunity isn't really a quote-unquote future opportunity. It's an opportunity now. African-American voters can now elect in the Democratic primary an African-American or whoever they believe is reflective of their values. If they believe Steny Hoyer is reflective of their values, then Steny Hoyer will continue to get elected. Should he not be reflective, or if there's another candidate that emerges, then that candidate will have an equal opportunity to get elected. And that's what the Voting Rights Act is all about, preserving the right for minority voters to elect representatives of their choice. So in the 5th Congressional District, I think that opportunity exists, okay? So I don't want to characterize it as a future opportunity. It's an opportunity that exists today because the majority of people who are registered to vote in the Democratic primary are African-American. So that's number one.
So,
Mark, can I chime in on the cynic's point of view?
You may.
And
Charles Robinson.
I want to address what the delegate said. But one of the things that was brought up was they were looking at long-term growth in the state and where those growth areas were going to be. And the two major growth areas in this state are going to come along what is called the 270 corridor and down in southern Maryland, where we've already seen an increase in the number of minority voters and African-American voters in particular, because it's becoming somewhat of a bedroom community in that area. And it does pose a particular challenge to those who want to run for those seats in those areas. I wasn't necessarily thrilled with the map, but it's the map that you get until someone, you know, goes into court and changes it. But what I think a lot of people in the state don't understand sometimes is that in the Montgomery County area, which the delegate talked about, yes, you not only do you have large groupings of African Americans, but you also have a large burgeoning Latino community and an Asian community that is asking, where is our representation? And that's what the problem is that when you look back and you look at the Voting Rights Act, you know, they ask some simple questions. And if you can't answer them, then that becomes the basis for a challenge.
But Mark, can I just ask something about Montgomery County here?
Please, Aaron.
You know,
Jamie,
there's nowhere in America that is post-racial, okay? But we've got pretty decent, progressive, multicultural, multiracial policy in Montgomery County. You know, when it was a majority white county, 8 years ago, we elected Ike Leggett as county executive. Delegate Susan Lee is Asian American. She got elected from an overwhelmingly white district. Anisol Gutierrez represents District 18, overwhelmingly white district. And just to add to Delegate Braithwaite's point, I represent the African-American district. And, you know, the Voting Rights Act is not about fundamentally the race or the ethnicity of the elected official. It's about making sure that majorities of African Americans and Hispanics and other minority groups are not artificially broken up by racist gerrymandering. And so I agree with Delegate Braveboy that we should consider every district state one that is contestable and contested and one that can be available to, you know, I would hope, progressive leaders across the spectrum. And so, you know, well, we can't forget that we've got an African-American president who got elected in a majority white country. So the country is changing, and, you know, I think that our focus should be on the character and the politics of the people that we're getting elected to office.
That's a really good point. And let's get our listeners in here for a moment. 410-319-8888. Aaron, you're on the air.
Well, Mark, this goes to show that Martin O'Malley and the Democratic Party has betrayed the African-American community in the worst way. And the legislative black caucus sold out the black community in the worst way, in my view, because they're too busy kowtowing to Martin O'Malley and the Democratic machine to fight for our interests. This map is a travesty, and quite frankly, I refuse to vote for anybody in the black caucus who voted for it. And I know that Delegate Jill Carter stood against it, and some in PG County, but the rest of them in that black caucus are a bunch of cowards.
Aaron, thank you very much. You could hear from you as usual. Any?
No.
410-319-8888. Hank, you're on the air.
How you doing today, Mr. Steiner?
I'm doing well, Hank. Welcome.
I am blessed, young man. Well, my theory is this, right? If they so busy voting up, dividing up our votes in our district, right, why not just go Republican? Or better still, why not give the independent a little bit more leeway and start voting for them, right? Because, I mean, really don't nobody care about our vote anyway but us. And that's what drives us not to come out and vote anyway, because nobody cares about our vote. So let's go with the people who do care about it and who want to use it to the best of their ability, the independent.
Just chime in on what he said.
Aisha Braveboy.
I mean, as someone, and again, you know, I represented the Black Caucus during the redistricting process. I mean, we did get a lot of, you know, of things accomplished in terms of not diluting sort of black voters here in Prince George's County, where I'm from. But I ultimately did not vote for the map because I did not feel it was a reflection of our state. I felt that it reduced African American voters. In the seventh congressional district, which again didn't reflect the growth of the African American population in the state, and it divided up the other minority votes in Montgomery County to an extent that I just could not support it. So, with that said, I will say that African American votes are absolutely important. People absolutely are interested in African American voters, so much so that they want to put African American voters in as many Democratic districts as possible because they know that the African American voters will come out and vote. They know that they'll vote for the Democratic Party, unlike, let's say, white Democrats who many times don't vote for their party. So they're not loyal sort of Democratic voters. So when folks are looking for loyal Democratic voters, they're absolutely looking for African-American voters. The problem with that is that because the African-American community is so loyal to the Democratic Party and Democrats really want African-American voters in their district, there is a tendency to want to split up the African-American vote to assist the party in maintaining seats. And that's where the voting rights come in. Voting Rights Act comes in and says, no, you can't do that. You cannot split up artificially black voters for partisan political interests. Mm-hmm. And that's what, you know, as we go into the legislative redistricting, we're going to really have to pay a lot of attention to, because there is a lot of interest, I believe, in having districts that are safe Democratic districts in areas that have growing black populations, and those black populations need to be allowed to grow together, to vote together, to elect representatives of their choice. And so as we move into the legislative redistricting, I think this issue is going to come up again, and it's going to be more relevant because we're currently underrepresented in both the Senate and the House in Maryland. African-Americans and other minorities also, but in particular African-Americans. And so we have a lot of work to do.
Well, let me ask that question then. But, and then next caller is Simon. Simon, hold on, because I want to ask this question and I'll come to your call. And I'll start with Jamie Raskin, and then Aisha and Charles quickly can chime in, and then we'll go to Simon, our next caller, which is that so the battle's going to take place inside the state legislature this January over how redistricting will affect the legislature, the state legislature. So, and that begs the question that Delegate Aisha Braveboy just posed, that in a state that is becoming, there's that word again, the majority-minority, how is that going to set up as a conversation, a strategic battle inside the legislature, and how that's going to play out? You look at Charles County now, in that area, there are no black delegates from down there.
Well, there's one black delegate.
One, okay, I'm sorry. One.
Who was just elected, right.
And in Charles County? And then in the Eastern Shore, you have how many African-American delegates in Eastern Shore?
One.
In Somerset County, which is majority minority, but you don't, but you do not have any representation from there as well. They haven't. The first black elected official in 400 years was this last year, what is going to take place in the state legislature around minority representation in the House and Senate, Jamie?
Well, I think that there's a very strong sense in the state, which I think Aisha has expressed very well, which is that the political demographics of the state are changing, and we've got to try to make sure that the political geography and the districting reflects that fact. And I think that that's a pervasive sensibility within the Democratic caucus on both sides. Remember, the federal redistricting is one that in the real world starts with the delegation. In other words, they sit down first and they try to work it out. And unfortunately, as I understand it, because I wasn't, on the inside of it, they didn't really work it out amongst themselves, which is why it was thrown to the legislature. And, we had a sort of unsavory process of kind of like public dispute about it. And I'm hoping that we'll be able to have an open and transparent and collaborative process where we're able to, realize all of these values in the process as much as possible. And again, I have a long-term interest in getting us to think beyond just the single-member district territorial thing, because I think that's where a lot of our problems come from. We're trying to pack so many different kinds of interests and values into these territorial districts, like reelecting the incumbents, partisan maximization, mm-hmm. empowerment of minorities, gender diversification, all these things. And there are really other ways of doing it that allow us to better vindicate all those different interests.
Charles, your observer, what do you see?
Well, this state has always had problems with reacting to changing populations, and it will go kicking and screaming into the future. And that's the easiest way to do it, because I think a lot of people have varied interests. There is an interest to maintain a Democrat in the governor's seat. There is an interest to make sure Democrats remain at the, at the forefront all across this state. And, there are always winners and losers in this process. The bad news is that the state's been sued each time it's redrawn one of these maps. And so whatever map you get, anticipate some kind of lawsuit.
Well, I know we have a caller, but Aisha, do you believe it was fairly collegial during this last special session? Do you think that drawing these legislative maps will be as smooth as it appeared that the congressional redrawing, redistricting was?
Well, I think it's not going to be as comfortable for people because it's going to affect them directly. And when you look at a place like Prince George's County, where I'm from, we are about 84% minority, about 67% African-American, and we currently have only 3 African-American senators representing Prince George's County, partly because of the way that our county, our districts have been drawn to really pack black voters in the central part of the county. And so so the black community doesn't really realize the full extent of its voting strength because they're packed generally into 3 districts, 24, 25, which I represent, and 26. And there's a lot of case law that really looks at that very negatively and says that you can't pack African Americans or other minority voters into a handful of districts to really reduce their total voting strength. And so we're going to have to look at redoing our districts in Prince George's County to more reflect the demographics of our county.
It's going to be interesting to watch. Let's go to the phone here. Simon, you're on the air.
Well, you know, it's an interesting discussion, and what I'd like to say is that the African-American community has been sold out by the Democratic Party, and it's time that the African-American community give the Democratic Party up for itself. Now, a lot of the issues that are being spoken about here, for example, what the delegate just got finished saying, we have been very loyal to the Democratic Party, but the Democratic Party has not been very loyal to us. That it takes lawsuits to get proper districting and proper spread of the demographics in the populations. But what's more important is whether Democrat or Republican these days, the average person isn't being properly represented. It's self-interest and the interest of commercial, wealthy, or those people who can afford to run campaigns, but people who cannot afford $1,000 dinners or huge contributions to the delegates or the senators' campaign fund are not represented well anywhere in the state. And that's what this Occupy movement all across the country is about. And I'm wondering if people are really paying attention to what the movement is saying. We want a voice, whether it be a black voice or a white voice, a Hispanic voice or an Asian voice. We want a voice that really addresses issues. And to me, right now, issues aren't being, even this issue about the redistricting is more about posturing and who will be in power, who will divvy up the pie, and how that pie will be distributed amongst those people who supported delegates, who supported senators, and who played the game the way it's been played now for the last several decades, where only a small minority of people actually benefit from what's going on in the political arena. Two things will happen. People will withdraw from the political arena, which really disempowers them, or people will actually rebel against the system itself.
Simon, you make some strong points, and let me turn this first to Jamie Raskin. As someone who comes even familiarly from the tradition of resistance, so talk about that.
Mark, forgive me, I lost the last minute or two, but I just got back on. I very much agreed with what the caller was saying when I got off the line there. I don't accept any corporate money. I never have accepted corporate money. I don't accept any corporate entity money. I think we have to start challenging our politicians not to take corporate money and to stand, you know, as the caller is suggesting, in an independent way in direct representation of the people. And, you know, I'm also a champion of public financing of campaigns, and I think we absolutely need to do that. So I think he raises what's really the most profound and serious issue now, which is, you know, will the government be responsive to the 99%, or will we continue essentially to, you know, serve an agenda of, you know, a tiny group of people who don't want taxes raised and are not committed to the social progress of everybody.
Mark Charles here. I want to talk about two words that you need to add to your nomenclature. The terms are called cracking and packing. That is this way that many legislators around the country are looking at it. Can we pack a district with people either we like or we don't necessarily like, or can we crack a district that has a particular voting record? And it's been very interesting to see how that has played out, not only in Maryland, but other states across the country.
And we are doing a lot of packing, and it's kind of very strange cracking as well. I mean, one of the things as I said earlier, just in terms of the pure political part of it, when you watch the legislature push out a congressman who's a Republican and fairly conservative, but a maverick, who supports alternative energy, who supports the environment, who is his own independent thinker in many ways, even though he's very conservative and right-wing, but you decide to give a district to a congressman who is one of those who actually loathes Democrats and supports this kind of new right-wing rupture inside of Congress. That I found very interesting, which had a lot more to be about where the power is living in the suburban Washington, to which is where the power is growing. And so I think that he was sacrificed there as opposed to the Eastern Shore.
But I also want to mention this. I mean, one of the ways, and we as a caucus, we learned early on that there was an interest in taking back really the first congressional district. But in order to do that, the party needed to find loyal Democratic voters, and so they wanted to come to Prince George's County. And on behalf of Black Caucus, I oppose that. You know, we wrote letters to everybody, at the leadership in the House and the Senate, to every congressional member. I appeared on news programs, radio, newspapers. Whoever would listen to me about this issue, you know, I spoke about it because I needed to get this in forefront of people's minds, number one, and also to let them know that we would oppose it. And that they cannot come in and dilute and take Black voters out of the 5th Congressional District and put them in the 1st Congressional District just to get another Democrat elected. And so that issue did come up, I think, because of the vigorous opposition from the Legislative Black Caucus, that that position was abandoned.
I want to thank Delegate Ayesha Braveboy, State Senator Jamie Raskin, and journalist Charles Robinson for joining us. It's been a great having the three of you in the air. My dear friend Anthony McCarthy for making his Monday appearance again, and
all right,
want to keep this going. He's back
right
in the house. Thank you all so much for joining us, and all of our callers for calling in.
You're welcome. Thanks, Mark.
I want to remind you as we leave here today that the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Mortgage Program, a community lending initiative of the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. If you live in Baltimore, you'd be surprised how easy it will be. You can get a home. 1-800-638-7781. 1-800-638-7781 is the number to call. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Crickin Harrison. We're engineered by Akisa Gunn. Our theme music is composed by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To this show again, podcast and repair shows, hear new additional interviews, and find out information about our guests and what they brought to our airwaves, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, I'm Mark Steiner, and it's Marcia Jews. She's coming in now to do her show.
Keep it moving with Marcia Jews.
Stay with us here. I'm Mark Steiner for WEA. Take care. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by MECU, Baltimore's credit union, and the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development.